Hello there, late night investigators. This is Alan, the all-seeing eye, and this is another episode of Tales from the Panopticon. And today we're going to have a little bit of a special treat. Today I've got my wife, Kaida Moran, with me, and she'll be helping me discuss today's topic, which is disabilities in gaming. So.
Yeah, I'm Kai. I play some tabletop gaming. I do a lot of sewing and costuming, stuff like that. So, kind of a varied interest in games. I have a chronic pain condition called fibromyalgia, and I have a couple other issues as well. I have Ehlers-Danlos type H, I have some degenerative disc issues, and I have a service dog. So I definitely am aware of some of the accessibility issues and some of the kind of alienation of the disabled community, so I definitely wanted to kind of put my two cents in.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to have, especially when it's such a personal thing, at least for me, because I enjoy having you at games, and I know sometimes it's not easy for you to be able to make it because it's a bad pain day, or you can't focus because of the fibro fog, and, you know, not everybody has what you have, but everybody's got something that's a little bit different and makes accessibility difficult. So It's a really good topic, especially since Candlekeep Mysteries was just announced by Wizards of the Coast. For those of you who are not familiar, Candlekeep Mysteries is the new setting book, I suppose. It's more of a campaign book. By the looks of it, it is a collection of 17 shorts, standalone D&D adventures, designed for characters levels 1 through 16, and it does include accessibility dungeon, as well as the official, was it the war chair?
Battle chair.
Mm-hmm. Which is a combat wheelchair. And I've been noticing since it was announced that the community is kind of split, and it really infuriates me that people are saying, oh, it's time to stop being woke gamers because this is just ridiculous. But when you look at these dungeons that are, you know, ramps instead of stairs, it makes more sense to have ramps.
Mm-hmm. And you've also got the disabled community who saw it and finally felt like someone was listening and finally felt represented. And it was really an amazing thing to see the response to the battle chair, especially.
I mean, definitely.
People were so happy. They were just getting so emotional about it because you just don't see it in a fantasy setting. So there isn't representation for folks like us.
Yeah. And there's actually, in the wake of everything that's been going on with the community, several groups have come out and said, oh, hey, guys, with all this, maybe you guys should shut up and listen to the disabled folks. There's there's a group that I just saw come up called D&D Disability, which is entirely about accessibility in TTRPGs.
Mm-hmm. And I've got a group that I started as well. In the comment section on a post similar to that, I mentioned that it would be nice just to have a group for people who are into all kinds of different fandoms and have disability issues, to be able to get together and just kind of talk about the unique difficulties that we face. And I ended up being talked into starting this group. So we've got a Facebook group now called the Disabled Nerds Guild. And the response has been so overwhelming from what I expected. I had a couple of people message me just thanking me for giving them that space. And obviously, being in that community, I knew I wanted a space like that. But I didn't realize how powerfully it would affect some other people in the community.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty amazing. I mean, we've only been up and running for like a week, and we're at like 80-some members, and people are just so excited about it.
Mm.
So it definitely is an important thing to have those spaces and have that accessibility for us.
Yeah, especially with some of the mainstream groups that I've seen on Facebook. There's a lot of toxicity within the player, within just players, and DMs about, oh, it's the battle chair, I don't understand why your character needs to be disabled. And it just makes no sense to me that, like, you know, for some people this is their reality. They don't care to be ambulatory, they want to be in a battle chair.
Yeah, I had a lot of people that were saying, I don't understand, in a fantasy world where magic could fix your legs, why would you choose to still be in a wheelchair? And the thing is, people, as a, you know, very broad general statement, able-bodied folks need to understand that our mobility aids are an extension of who we are. That's why I have such an issue, like, if I'm out with my dog and he's helping me across the street, I need you to not wave and say, hi puppy, come here, hi puppy, hi, because he could yank me off my feet if he turns. And it's kind of like, you wouldn't see someone come up and say, oh, I love wheelchairs, what type is it? Oh, can I pet it? And it's the same thing. And so, if that sounds absurd to you, you know, imagine someone saying, oh, can I use your cane? Or, oh, can I sit on your walker for a minute? It's like asking, can I sit on your lap? I mean, it's part of who we are. It is an extension of our bodies. And so in that way, when we want to play a character that we can see ourselves in, having them share that same disability or mobility aid or anything like that is so, so important. Because I can then play a character who, yeah, I could choose, I don't want to be in a wheelchair, so I'm just going to walk in this setting. Or I could say, I want to be in a wheelchair and not have it limit me.
Exactly.
So we're now able to have the same adventures and still see ourselves in it. And for some folks who maybe haven't been able to walk since birth, or it's been a very, very long time, I can imagine that being very difficult to try and put you in the mindset of someone who doesn't have that same issue as you do. So it can be easier for us to play and think, okay, I know I wouldn't be able to scamper up this thing. How would I think myself out of this?
Yeah, and it also, like, when you look at how the media portrays disability, especially in fantasy or action, prime example is Game of Thrones. There was Bran Stark, who was almost immediately put into a wheelchair within like two or three episodes of the first season.
Yeah.
And everybody's saying that, you know, in fantasy gaming, oh, wheelchairs, no, they shouldn't, you know, people shouldn't be doing that. But you have characters like Bran who are literally like, they're badass from a wheelchair.
And you have in Vikings too, you have the character of Ivar Legless.
Oh, Ivar the Boneless, yes.
Well, yeah, it's the translation issue. It can translate to boneless or legless or, yeah.
Yeah, but the majority can agree, though, that the name that he is, like, preferred by, that everybody is known him by, is Boneless.
Yeah. For me, it's just a little background. I study a lot of myths and legends and theology kind of stuff, so I get stuck on other translations sometimes.
Yeah.
But yes, Ivar Boneless, the way they show him in that show as someone who really is profoundly disabled, but he's such an amazing character. I don't even watch the show, but the reaction from the disabled community, I mean, I'm seeing clips shared everywhere. We are so excited. Like, in one of the later episodes, they make him a custom chariot where he can be strapped in a standing position and ride into battle. And the amount of power that gives me, that feeling of strength and joy and power, you can't match it. You really can't.
Well, especially since Ivar the Boneless is actually based on the myth or the legend of Ivar the Boneless. Loosely, he was, you know, supposedly the son of Ragnar Lothbrok.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and there's some discussion, the word that is used in his last name, some translate it to legless, meaning that he had a disability of the legs.
Yep.
And some translate it to boneless, which could have meant he was impotent.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that they took the take on it and took that opportunity to show someone with a profound disability and to show it in a way where it's not inspiration porn.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of that out there where you get, what is it, The Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, yeah.
That, oh, I'm so sickly and things are so hard, but look how inspiring my life is. Don't you wish you had the outlook that I did? And it's kind of like, you know what? Fuck you.
Yeah.
It really, it is.
It's attention seeking.
Yeah. Well, it's not attention seeking. It's that they're portraying it as, the only way I can see that your life has value is if it teaches me a lesson.
Yeah.
And that can be really painful. That, you know, there's the movement, the cripple punk movement, or for those that are uncomfortable using the cripple word, they can say C-punk.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this cripple punk movement where it rejects that idea of inspiration porn. And they say, yes, I'm disabled. I'm not going to teach you a life lesson. I'm not your manic pixie dream girl, you know? And to also embrace and say, yeah, sometimes life really sucks. Sometimes there's things I want to do and I can't. Like you mentioned, sometimes I miss D&D sessions because I'm just hurting too much that day. And it sucks.
Yeah.
It's hard. But you know what? I still love my life. And I still love who I am. And I've learned some amazing lessons from going through the struggles that I did. But they're not for you. They're for me.
Yeah.
And so to have a character like Ivar Legless, who, oh my gosh, I did it again. Ivar Boneless.
Ivar the Legless.
Yes. Who, they show that some people kind of doubt him and look down on him in this show. But they show him fight back against that and the things that he can do.
And what ended up making him become a legend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that, to me, is so important and so necessary. So, to circle it back to gaming, I mean, this battle chair was just...
It's a necessity.
It was heaven sent. Yeah. I mean, it just felt like, I see you, you're there, let's make this work for you.
Yeah. And from my perspective of gaming history, I feel that people have been using the battle chair as a sort of unofficial, quote-unquote, item.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard from other games that I've seen online, or from comments that I've read online, of people who have had characters who are, for lack of a better word, crippled. And they've used ambulatory items, like wheelchair, or like a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a riding backpack that you can have on, like, a large character. And you know, people have been using these for 30 some odd fucking years, and nobody said a damn thing about it until, you know, they decided
it matched the reality.
Until it matched the reality, and then everybody started getting up in arms because it's woke culture.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, it's not woke culture, it's inclusionary.
Yeah.
And if you're against it, then you need to shut the fuck up.
Well, I mean, we see all throughout history of games and sci-fi and fantasy in general of people with, like, magic limbs.
Yeah.
Like, what's the movie? Alita Battle Angel?
Oh, yeah, Alita.
Yeah, Alita Battle Angel, who they made her arms and gave them to a young girl who had lost her arms.
Yeah.
And they did it, yes, as a promotion, but, I mean, the things that she was able to do...
Inspired.
Were very inspiring.
Yeah.
But, so, a lot of folks, and I'm talking real world, a lot of folks who have lost legs, a prosthetic isn't an option for them.
Yeah. Because it's expensive.
It's expensive, but also, if you want to really get full use out of prosthetic, like the folks that you see running, you know, Paralympic marathons, you need multiple.
Yeah.
You need one that's for swimming, one that's for biking, one that's for jogging, and
one that just
is way less realistic for an adventure.
Yeah.
Than having a battle chair, because I can't open my backpack and take out one leg and put it on and swap them out and then climb the mountain.
Yeah. And I mean, even further into that, there's things like, there are people who have had characters who are monoplegic, or they're missing an arm, and they consider that to be normal. And that just, that's a disability. Yes. It's a disability that has been normalized because, oh, it's an adventurer. But you're overlooking the fact that it's an accessibility issue. Mm-hmm. And so what you said earlier, it's a paradigm shift.
Yes, it's a cultural shift.
It's a cultural shift.
Yeah.
That you have to move out of where you are right now, look at the culture of the, you know, for better lack of better terms, the gaming society, and change the culture of it. And it really did start when they announced the Candlekeep Mysteries.
I think we're seeing a microcosm right now in the gaming community of issues that have faced the disabled community for much, much, much longer.
Yeah.
Because there's very much this attitude of out of sight, out of mind, but purposely. That I don't want to see you in your wheelchair. I don't want to see you with your crutches. I want that to the side, unless you're here to teach the main character a lesson.
Yeah.
And so now that it's in your face and it's being shown as, yes, this character has a profound disability. They are not able to be mobile without this chair. And it's calling it what it is. That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's been mech chairs forever. Mm-hmm. There's been, I don't know, rangers that can't walk, so they ride their mount all the time. You know, this is a thing that's been there. It's this attitude shift that now that we're calling it by name and saying what it actually is, well, I don't want to be reminded of that. That makes me sad.
Well, yeah, it's you have to get over that. Mm-hmm. People really do need to get over the fact that it makes you sad. It's it's not your life; it's theirs.
Yes.
And so, if their characters or they themselves wish to be in a battle chair or a permanent riding mount, you gotta get used to it. Either you'll either end up ostracizing yourself out of a group, or, you know, you'll get used to it and it will become, you know, second nature. For some people, it already is second nature because that's their lives. That's their daily life.
And I think you briefly touched on something there that a lot of what I'm seeing in online conversations is things like, well, I would never choose to use that. If I was in a wheelchair, I would want to play a character who doesn't use one. And it's like, cool, you're not in the disabled community.
Yeah.
Do not speak for me.
And I feel like the same sort of happens with non-ambulatory, or with people who are not in the disabled community. I almost feel like, want to romanticize it.
Yes. Again, it circles back to that inspiration porn thing.
Yeah.
But they make these statements, and then when we come in, and I especially am notorious for calling it out,
yeah,
and saying, that is incredibly ableist. You don't know what it's like. You don't know what we're feeling. How dare you say this is unnecessary? And the response is, well, I'm just stating my opinion. Well, cool. You're stating it online on the internet for hundreds of thousands of people to see, if not more. You either got to keep it to yourself, or you need to understand that you're saying things that are going to get you called out. Because what you're saying, I would never choose to do this, you're saying, I don't want to have to put myself in the mindset of people like you.
Yeah.
And that makes us not welcome. It makes us not want to be part of the group. I mean, if you can't even step back and understand why someone would want to use the battle chair or the accessible dungeon, or to say, hey, I don't understand, help me understand. You just say, I don't see why this is necessary.
Yeah.
Why would we want to be part of that community?
And, I mean, you can even go, like, follow me a step backwards here. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't look at, you know, the accessibility of the Candlekeep dungeon that is in question, or the battle chair. If you're building, think literally here, if you're building a dungeon and you've got some heavy ass equipment, mm-hmm, you are not going to be hauling it downstairs. You're going to have ramps. You're going to have rollers. You're going to want to roll that thing down to where it needs to go. It makes more sense. both from a constructive standpoint and from a, you know, from a literal standpoint. Like, you're not going to want to climb up 10,000 steps to move something when you can just slip on down the slide.
Yeah.
So, you know, ramps are kind of a necessity in, you know, anything. Like, the pyramids were built on slopes. They weren't built on stairs. The way they were built was, it was impressive for the time, and that's exactly what's going on with these dungeons. And so now you add the accessibility back into it. It just makes it, it makes it both more realistic, but also makes it more dangerous for the character in the battle chair. Because now you have a degreed slope, and there's, it's either a matter of control your descent or go face first into combat.
Yeah.
So it really does change how you play the game tactically. And a lot of these people who are complaining about, the battle chair, it really changes the dynamic of how you have to approach anything you're doing. Yeah, you're not going to be climbing up a mountain in a battle chair. You're going to need some help with that. But at the same time, if you're trying to explore this dungeon and you're on slopes, well, the ambulatory is going to have totally fine. They're going to be totally fine with that. A battle chair, on the other hand, it's either they're going to have to not have their weapon to move, or they're going to have to go down at full speed.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other part of it, too, that people don't realize is for folks that already are thinking about how they're going to move around in the real world, it's kind of freeing to think, well, what if I really could go on this grand adventure and then not have to change the way you would normally navigate, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you'd already be thinking, okay, I have to guide my way down the stairs. How am I going to carry my groceries?
Yeah.
Or ramp, I should say. How would I carry my groceries? And it's the same sort of thought. So it's freeing.
Yeah. And the other part of the toxic culture, I suppose, is that a lot of players, I've noticed, that the community sort of split. Like, half of it is very focused on the characters themselves, and they're the ones that I feel have the most fun. They're the ones that design their characters by their characters, mm-hmm. by their personality, by their, you know, their defining traits, not by their stats.
Yeah.
And then you get the guys who optimize, who are, they have to be the most peak min-max character of all time, and those are the ones I feel are the ones that are complaining, because they're focused too far much on, or far too much, I can speak, on the mechanics of the game and less about the game itself.
Yeah.
And to quote Calhoun from Video Game High School, it's all about the game, baby. It's always been about the game. It's never been about the book, and it actually states in the book that the main purpose of this game is to have fun.
Have fun, yeah.
So, I really dislike when the community gets splintered like this. But it really just shows that there are the people that are like, okay, yeah, whatever, it's a battle chair. Those are the ones that will more than likely be more fun to have in parties than the people that are complaining that you have a battle chair.
Yep. You have to be willing to bend the letter of the rule and the spirit of enjoying the game.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of what it comes back to, what you're saying with being more character-focused or being more min-max-focused, you know?
Yeah.
That if you're not willing to bend, if you're too focused on rules lawyering, which, I mean, we've all done it at one point or another, it's just, it becomes, I'm trying to see if I can find the words for it. It becomes, like, soul-sucking, almost. That you're putting all of this energy into making sure you've got everything down to the letter. You know, let yourself breathe.
Let yourself have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, prime example is your character, Cupcake.
Yes. Cupcake.
So I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast before. My wife has a character named Cupcake. She is a half-orc barbarian,
who dresses in frilly Lolita dresses.
Yeah, and Cupcake is quite possibly the most cutest and terrifying character I have ever had the pleasure of having in any of my games.
I mean, she became everyone's favorite.
Yeah, she really did. But Cupcake has multiple personality disorder.
Dissociative identity. Dissociative identity, which I did tread very lightly on because I obviously am not someone who struggles with that. But I wanted to play on the psychological ideas of trauma because I do have PTSD. I do have some trauma in my past. So I wanted to play off of that, that psych damage trope without it being like, oh, I've cut myself off to everyone and blah, 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 blah.
And so
what I did with it is that she was childlike. She had the childlike flaw. And so she was permanently viewing the world as a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old somewhere in there would. And that was really entertaining because it was, what if you gave a fully grown adult-sized child a morning star?
Yes, and one that was shaped like Sailor
Moon.
It
was a mace, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. It was one that had the Sailor Moon symbol.
No, it was just a fairy wand.
Fairy wand.
It was like a star.
Yeah, fairy wand.
Fairy wand. Yeah. And she'd go poof and whack him over the head.
And it would release a little bit of glitter because, you know, she had to do that. But one of the things that we did, because, you know, accessibility, is we introduced to Cupcake a dire wolf that she befriended, who is our service dog, Byron.
Yes.
Who is currently asleep right next to us. He's got his head in my lap like a good boy. And he's dead asleep to the world.
Yeah, we had a big working day today. He was working hard for me in his harness.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's the thing. People with accessibilities, they may not want to just play a normal character, whatever normal is to people. They want to play what is normal to them, and normal to them is having their service dog be their, you know, their companion and, you know, battle animal.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of moments where I, in my, you know, in my own life, was having some trouble being too overwhelmed with emotion and stuff like that, and so when the character would hit the stage where she got overwhelmed and she couldn't handle it, this wolf would come trotting up and, you know, do the same thing my dog does, which is provide deep pressure therapy and lay across your lap to give you something to hold on to, physically hold on to ground yourself in the moment. And it was really an amazing thing to tie into the game.
Yeah, it really did bring up a lot of good things for the game.
Yeah, and allowed me to kind of honor Byron and kind of pay homage to how much he helps me in my real life by making him a heroic character in game.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like mechanically it was a good thing. It was also narratively, he created quite a few different, like, he created quite a few little offshoots of things that, like, really made the party follow along more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's never just about, you know, it's never just about a wheelchair. It's never just about missing a leg or missing an arm, missing a hand, inability to speak, blind. People have been doing that since D&D's inception, way back when. It's just how things are. Everybody has that blind monk that they played, or the blind cleric, or, you know, the mute bard. They, you know, they find it to be a really interesting character concept. But what you're not understanding is it's accessibility.
Mm.
It's disability being used.
Yeah. And these are real people who really deal with these disabilities, and it becomes a matter of, why are you able to put yourself into it when it furthers your story, but not understand why someone who actually has that condition would want to include it?
Yeah, it's romanticization.
Mm-hmm.
And either you have to come to terms with that, or you need to stop it. Like, you just have to understand that, like, if you're going to complain about it, then stop using those characters.
Absolutely.
It's just the long and the short of it. If you're going to complain about accessibility in gaming, then stop using those characters. You're not allowed to use the blind character, the mute character, you know, monoplegic, paraplegic, quadriplegic. You can't
amputee,
do that.
Any of that.
Yeah. All those tropes are gone. And then if even if you want to take it a step further, those with mental handicaps. Mm-hmm. Mental handicaps are also disabilities. I've seen it with one of our players. His depression is so bad that he's not able to make it to game. Mm-hmm. And so that is an accessibility issue. Mm-hmm. If you're playing a like overly depressed rogue, guess what? It's an accessibility thing. Mm-hmm. You can't use that trope anymore. Your only defining character at this point is going to be a substandard, lawful good paladin.
I'm Norm Everyman.
Yeah, you're literally playing a lawful good paladin. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be doing that, your games are going to get very boring very quick. Mm-hmm.
Well, and to tie back into, you know, actual, how you can have real life accessibility, when you do have a person like that who has a disability, so as we mentioned, we have a group member who's dealing with some pretty bad emotional issues right now. One of the things that can help, you know, I've seen a lot of, oh, so-and-so keeps missing sessions, so he's just not allowed to play anymore. And you have to understand what the reason behind it is. Is it, oh, I stayed up drinking too much the night before and just couldn't make it? Or it's, oh, I had a date, so I had to cancel last minute? That I can understand being an issue.
Yeah.
But when you've got someone who's, I'm just hurting too much today, I can't make it, whether that be physical or emotional, being able to have a character that, okay, well, this character is in the hospital for a while, or this character has decided that they need to go home and visit their family. Yeah. And then having them be able to come back in later. Yes, it could be a little irritating. And trust me, we get it.
Yeah, especially
it's hurting people.
Especially me. I've had to have a couple conversations in regards to that, saying, hey, look, I can't write anything until I know that you can, mm-hmm. you know, maintain a level of attendance. But that doesn't mean that you're not welcome at the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean the other side of that. When I have a day where I just can't do it, I know it's hard on everybody else.
Yeah.
I do. And so it's not that we're not acknowledging that. It's just something we have to deal with. There's just some days we can't. And you can get even more literal with it that if, well, I mean, obviously we've got this pandemic going on,
yeah.
So it will be a while. But
yeah.
Making sure that if you have someone who has really bad social anxiety and they just can't handle too many people, maybe meet at the library instead of at the local game shop, you know?
Yeah.
To accommodate that. And if you've got somebody who...
Sorry,
folks. I don't
know
if you picked that up, but that's the dog
snoring. It definitely picked that up. I heard it in the monitor.
Sorry. Where was I going with this? So if you've got more physical access issues, you know, let's say you want to meet at so-and-so's house, but you have to meet in the basement and someone can't do stairs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something to be aware of. Make sure you're talking to your players about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know one of the things we do in order to make sure that, you know, a few of us do have a history of trauma, and it's something that we're all working around. So whenever we start a campaign, everyone who's playing fills out the RPG consent list.
Yeah. You
can probably attach this wherever you post as well.
Yeah, I will find it. You can actually find this online. I will put a link in the description. But it is a short PDF and a literal consent list where you give to your players. I make all of my new players mm-hmm. sign it. That way there is absolutely no topic that is on there is ever discussed, or if it is discussed extremely lightly, or it is worked around.
Yeah, it gives you basically, you know, the one that I can think of being really important in today's social climate, we should say, is say it's something like racial tension.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, no, absolutely not, Red, I just can't handle this, which is totally understandable with things that have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, hey, this is delicate. Can you talk to me about it first?
Yeah. So,
or you can say, okay, nope, it's fine. Green light. Go ahead.
Yeah. So here, I pulled up the PDF on my phone. It's called Consent in Gaming. It's by Sean K. Reynolds and Shauna Germain. And it's actually presented by Monty Cook Games, with creative director Monty Cook himself. And it's a great little PDF. It's not that long. It's probably, hold on. Yeah, it's only like 12 pages long. And then you get to the RPG consent list. And they've got everything. They've got a section for horror. You check on green, yellow, red. Bugs, blood, demons, eyeballs, gore, harm to animals, harm to children, rats, spiders, and they always leave sections to write in.
Mm-hmm.
There's romantic relationships where it's fade to black, explicit between PCs and PCs and NPCs, sexual nature stuff, social and cultural issues, homophobia, racism, world religions, sexism, specific cultural issues. Mental and physical, which is also another one that fits into what we're talking
Absolutely.
About. Cancer, claustrophobia, freezing to death, gaslighting, genocide, heat stroke, natural disasters, paralysis and physical restraint, police or police aggression, which is a big one these days,
mm-hmm.
Pregnancy, miscarriage, or abortion, which is also a big one if you have...
Very huge if you've got someone who's had a pregnancy or infant loss.
Yes. And then there's self-harm, severe weather, sexual assault, which is a huge one. None of my games ever contain any act of sexual assault. It is referred to if it is in somebody's backstory, but we make sure that everybody at the table is aware before we start discussing that.
And that's one that I know a number of members in our group just said, I just can't handle that. And me included.
Yeah.
And it's totally acceptable. And I think... tying back to what we were saying before, that people are like, oh, it's PC culture. This is making your players comfortable.
Yeah.
And why would you not want to?
If everybody at the table is comfortable, then you're going to have a good game. If you start making your players uncomfortable, nobody's going to want to play. Then you're not going to have a group. There's not going to be consistency, and nobody's going to have a good time. And I can still hear him snoring.
I'm so sorry, guys. He was running around in the snow this morning, and then we were shopping, and
oh
he was
God,
working for me.
It is
He's
so cute.
He's having a big dream.
He is so cute. He's running in his sleep here, and his snoring is so loud in my monitor. It is adorable.
I'm
I love
sorry.
It. No. It's I'm sure people need to laugh. So...
He's our comic relief.
He is our comic relief. I love this boy. Love him so much. He really has changed our life, not just in the RPG sense or in the gaming sense, but he really...
Oh, without a doubt, I would not have made it through this last year.
Oh, yeah. 2020 would have been a living nightmare without him for you.
No, to be completely honest, and even with him, I went through a period of severe depression recently this year in December.
Yeah.
And I would not have made it without this dog waking me up at 10 a.m., you know, say, hey, mom, it's time to get up and take your meds and feed me breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah, he's changed our life. And it definitely has made me more able to go out and do the things that I love and enjoy. And I think that's the entire point of having this conversation.
Yes, it's that accessibility, because if you didn't have him, you wouldn't have made it to games.
No way.
No. There have been days where I've seen you, before we ever even considered having Byron,
mm-hmm.
where you were just like, no, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And Byron got you up out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
He got you out of bed. He got me to move around earlier and make sure that you were okay. And this is daily life, for not just us, for a lot of people. And... it's about having a fucking heart for these people who are just trying to enjoy themselves in a setting that isn't their current one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't deal with that, shut the fuck up. Anyways, is there anything else you want to cover on this topic before we move on?
I think I just want to say that if anyone would like us to do a follow-up, or if you would like to tell your stories of a time where
oh, yes.
issues like this did... you know, did affect your gaming experience, we would so love to hear it.
Yes.
I would love to pass on any comments or anything that you think needs to be discussed further. We would absolutely do a follow-up.
Oh, definitely. And if you are listening to this and you do have a disability, please, 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 please join the Facebook group that my wife started.
Yep, the Disabled Nerds Guild.
Yes, it is a fantastic resource to be able to just hang out with other people who have disabilities. It doesn't matter what your disability is. You could, you know, you could have paralysis in, like, a couple of fingers, but a paralysis in a couple of fingers really screws your life up.
We also, we're using disabled in the broad sense, so it's a physical limitation, or if you have an emotional or mental disability. So if you have autism, that is absolutely something that's going to affect your daily life and something that's going to affect how you play. We welcome you as well. And, you know, those who are severely depressed, they're also welcome. So, you know, it's when we created it with the goal of building a community and building a place where it was safe to have these conversations.
I'm trying not to laugh, folks. I'm sorry. Please, no. Oh no. I woke him up. I'm trying so hard not to laugh, but his snoring is just so cute. I know this whole podcast is supposed to be about, you know, setting the tone of horror and trying to maintain this, you know, this panopticon that I am doing, but for fuck's sakes, he is just too adorable. You cannot turn down a dog like that. Anyways, yes, check out, what is it again?
The Disabled Nerds Guild.
Thank you. The Disabled Nerds Guild on Facebook, or if, you know, you don't feel comfortable with joining a group, feel free to message us at the All Seeing Eye.
But we will be starting a Discord for that group soon, by the way.
Yes. And also, I am opening up my Discord channel, which was primarily for my games on startplaying.games. I am opening it up as a horror community as well. So feel free to join us there. As I said, you can join us on any of those, or you can hit me up directly, Alan Sanchez Capers. Now, moving on, today's topic is about a very unusual game. Now, the unusual game the unusual game for this week was brought to you by my father, Ethan Capers, and he used to play this game called Torg. It is a West End game. Originally published, second printing was in January 1992. And it's actually a rather interesting setting, just in general, where all of reality has come to our reality. So it ended up turning our reality into this just incredible mix. There was the techno-papacy, like the Noir Nile and stuff like that. But essentially, the rulers of these realities were all trying to become the Torg, which was the deity or the god, by consuming the energy of all the other realities to make their reality the only one. So it's an incredible system that actually is non-conducive to a pandemic environment, unfortunately, unless you have, you know, some sort of TTS or VTT, the virtual tabletop or tabletop simulators, because this does require that you have what's called a Destiny deck, a Chaos deck, and there's some other tokens that get added into this, but essentially what's going on is, you've got your standard array of abilities, or your ability scores, you get equipment, stuff like that. And it's done by ranks and measures, sort of like Mutants and Masterminds, if you're familiar. But it's one roll table. Mm-hmm. And there is quite a bit of rules that go into this. So Torg First Edition is quite crazy. However, if you look into a more modern version of it, there is Torg Eternity, which came out not that long ago, a few years ago. And it's also a West End game. Yeah, it is a West End game. And so it definitely a great system to check out. If for nothing else, you can use its settings among your current settings. Because, as I said, there's the Techno-Papacy, which was the Vatican turning into the Cult Mechanicus from 40K. and stuff like that. They're just... I wish I had a little more time to learn this system, but I have been on such a kick with my writing that I haven't really had a chance to. So here, here we go. Okay. Yeah, I do apologize, folks. The Ords, Stormers, and Storm Knights, the Invaders, the Living Land. Let's see here. That one is a primitive, the primitive tribes of the Living Land have invaded the west coast of the United States and much of the north central portion of the country. Their leader, the High Lord, known as, Baruka, has brought in a world of great spiritual power where the technology of the United States is powerless. The Isil... The Isil encompasses what was once Scandinavia and Great Britain. The realm of Isil is a land of confusion for much of the probability wars, split between dueling forces of honor and corruption, light and darkness. Early in the course of the war, Isil's High Lord Eutherian was dethroned, setting the stage for a civil war in the realm. And it appears to be a very high fantasy setting with orcs, humans, elves, giants, dwarves, stuff like that. The Nile Empire is a 1930s pulp style reality. You know, the how would you best explain that? It's almost like Perot in the 30s, I suppose. Like pulp. Pulp in Egypt.
Oh, I mean, it's still kind of noir, but, yeah, the 1920s had a big boom on Egyptology.
Yeah. And so, the High Lord of this realm is known as Pharaoh Mobius. The Cyber Papacy is the one that I was talking about. It's the High Lord Pope Jean Malraux. And it's literally exactly what it sounds like. It is the Cult Mechanicus. You know, Nippon Tech is it's essentially cyberpunk in Japan, and it oversees Japan. The Arush is the Gaunt Men, and they are over Indonesia, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, stuff like that. Tharkhold, which is the post-apocalyptic and savage world that is over Central Asia. And Space Gods, this whole system is about probability and how, you know, we as characters interact with that probability. And you're trying to save your realm from all the other probabilities, or the other probable realms. And so in order to do that, you have to go in there and explore, and your current, like if you are from Nippon Tech and you've got all this, you know, high-end fancy cybernetic stuff, and you go into, say, you know, the Nile Empire, where it's 1930s, you walk in there and all that cybernetic stuff ends up turning into that 1930s style stuff because it has to fit in. There's a certain wavelength, I suppose, is the best option or the best way to say it. There's a certain wavelength where probability is too far on either end of the spectrum, so it has to even out so that reality stays the same. And so your environment changes as you move into it if you're not from in that environment. And it really does present a lot of interesting scenarios for every character to play in. So check it out, West End Games. It's called Torg, or, you know, the newest version of it, it's called Torg Eternity. The stories that my dad gave me from when he was playing are incredibly awesome. So, you know, it's an older game, but it is still a very interesting game, especially in today's meta for gaming. So this has been Alan from Tales from the Panopticon. If you like what you hear, please like us on Facebook at The All-Seeing Eye, or join us on, or send us a message, we'll send you the Discord. And also remember to go check out the Disabled... I will get this one day.
The Disabled Nerds Guild.
Thank you. The Disabled Nerd Guild. Nerds Guild. I will get this one day, I swear. another short announcement before we go. I have a game written up that I am working on for City of Mist. If you are interested in trying to play any of that, please check us out on startplaying.games at Panopticon Gaming. Panopticon Gaming? It's Panopticon GM, I think. I can't even remember anymore.
On Facebook?
No, on startplaying.games. Check us out on startplaying.games. Even if you don't play any of my games, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of amazing GMs on there who have great stories to tell. And it's all about the game. So, even if you don't play one of my games, check it out. These guys are relatively affordable. I know I am relatively affordable, starting my game somewhere between $5 to $10. So, please check it out. And if you haven't heard of City of Mist, go check them out. That is a Son of Oak game. And have a good night, my late night explorers.